could I invite the Commissioner for Equal Opportunity in Western Australia? Thank you very much for making your time available to us. And again, on behalf of Gary, thank you very much for the written submission. It's a very helpful review of state legislation. Thank you. If you would like to speak to that submission, we would be very interested to hear what you have to say.
Thanks very much, and thank you for the opportunity to contribute to your deliberations on this very important topic. So at the outset, the Equal Opportunity Commission of Western Australia certainly supports the removal of all forms of discrimination against same-sex couples. We commend the Human Rights and Equal Opportunity Commission on its decision to investigate this matter in the court on it, and we believe there is no basis on which same-sex couples should be denied access to financial and work-related benefits merely as a result of being a same-sex rather than a heterosexual couple. While same-sex couples are unable in Australia at present to marry and to derive the automatic benefits that flow from the legal recognition of a marriage, this highlights the need to ensure that in the same way that de facto heterosexual relationships are now widely recognised and accorded many benefits previously only available to married couples, that these same rights should now be extended to same-sex couples. Many entitlements that flow from federal legislation to heterosexual de facto and married couples are intended to recognise the special position of a partner in an ongoing relationship. Thus, benefits that flow to partners from superannuation funds, from tax concessions, from pension entitlements, from health concessions are all premised on the recognition of the existence of a relationship. To deny the partners in a same-sex relationship, this benefit undoubtedly disadvantages these people and may in turn deny them benefits that were intended for people in particular circumstances, such as, for example, the death of their partner. Such discrimination has no logical or moral foundation, and in fact it only serves to marginalise and treat as second-class citizens those who are in same-sex relationships. Many of these taxpayer-funded benefits have undoubtedly been contributed to by gay and lesbian persons who are members of the community through their payment of income taxes. In any event, the benefits are designed to meet a particular need rather than as a reward for paying taxes. Society has changed a great deal in the last 50 years. Most Australian states have outlawed discrimination based on marital status and also on the basis of sexual orientation. Thus, most members of same-sex couples could bring complaints to state equal opportunity bodies where the discrimination was based on either or both of those attributes. It's clearly an outdated mechanism that financial and other benefits are denied to members of same-sex partnerships. It is also repugnant to notions of fairness and equality of treatment. The West Australian Equal Opportunity Commission supports strongly the outlawing of such forms of discrimination. Now, the next section of our submission goes to issues about the functions of the West Australian Commission, the various grounds of the Act. I don't think I need to go through those with them. You have them in front of you. We refer in turn to your own terms of reference. And then we describe what has happened in the state, which shows that in 2001, after a commitment had been given pre-election, the Gallup government established a ministerial committee to assist in the development of amendments to a wide range of pieces of legislation to end discrimination against lesbian, gay and bisexual people. That committee met over an extended period of time and made some 47 recommendations, the large majority of which were supported by the government and incorporated into subsequent legislation. Several were referred to other agencies for review and comment, and there was a proposal, for example, which might have been one of the only proposals that wasn't taken up at the time, to extend the definition of goods and services in the Equal Opportunity Act to include all government services. Now, this was determined by the Attorney General at the time to be broader and beyond the scope of the brief given to the Ministerial Committee, because it would have included and addressed issues which have arisen from time to time, for example, in relation to when police are making arrests as to whether they're actually delivering a service, whether when regulatory bodies are fining people, whether they're in fact delivering a service, whether they're considering applications for planning approval, whether they're delivering a service. And so that matter was one of the only matters of the 47 recommendations that wasn't taken up because it was so broad in its scope. The results of all of those deliberations and the taking up of those recommendations was the Omnibus Act, Acts Amendment Lesbian Gay Reform Act 2002, which comprehensively amended a wide range of West Australian statutes to remove discrimination against lesbian, gay and bisexual people. And I have then set out for you a summary of the acts that were amended, and they go right through from the Administration and Adoption Act, the Artificial Conception Act, Birth, Sex and Marriage Discrimination Act, the Criminal Code, which does under the effect your terms of reference, the Family Court Act, the Guardianship and Administration Act, etc. So I've listed all of those there.
Commissioner, how many of these were just, how many of these amendments were achieved by a simple change to the Interpretation Act, which applied by force of its terms to many other acts, or and how many required specific definitional and other changes?
The amendment that was made to the Interpretation Act was made to the definition of de facto, and what it did was it extended the definition of de facto to include same-sex couples. So that meant that where in any of these acts references and changes had already been made to extend rights to de facto partners, for example, then by that amendment to the Interpretation Act, they automatically extend to those the same sex. But there was a variety of other matters which, for example, if I look at the Family Court Act, West Australia is one of the only states that has its own State Family Court Act, and it deals almost exclusively with ex-nuptial children. And the changes that were made there, for example, removed references to parents and to father and mother. Removed references to father and mother and placed them with parent, which in turn included same-sex parents. So that allowed same-sex couples to bring their disputes to the family court in relation to children of same-sex couples, which then, I think, places West Australia in a different position to us ourselves, even though the rest of the Family Court Act in general terms reflects the federal legislation which governs family law matters in most states. So there were amendments made to all those acts that are there. Some of them were relatively minor, others were more substantive, but the only amendment that I am aware of to the Interpretation Act was the one I mentioned.
Well, you mentioned somewhere in the submission here there were 61 acts altogether that were amended. You have listed 61 there. Is it the case then that the others were amended simply by reference to the definition of de facto?
No, they weren't amended by reference to, as a result of the Interpretation Act change. They were amended because in the same year there was legislation introduced to extend benefits to de facto couples. And so another 40-odd acts were amended as part of that process.
Thank you.
Now, on page 6, having gone through all these various other pieces of legislation that were amended, I make reference to the fact that there are some exceptions. So the Equal Opportunity Act itself, of course, was amended to make unlawful discrimination on account of sexual orientation. And as with other attributes, that is across an area of range of areas of public life. But there are exceptions to that, such as in accommodation in private households, accommodation provided by religious bodies, and the various other matters that I set out at page 6 and 7 of the submission. As far as we are aware, most of these legislative changes have, for all intents and purposes, removed all discriminatory provisions within West Australian legislation from matters such as benefits available to same-sex partners of a person who might be killed or injured at work, for example, under workers' compensation legislation, through to the inheritance legislation and guardianship and administration acts and so on. We're not aware that there are any pieces of legislation that remain untouched which are relevant to financial work-related matters. In relation to what has happened since the Equal Opportunity Act has been amended, I've provided you with some figures there. We've had some 23 formal complaints since the Act was amended, which is not a very high number. But enormous publicity was given to the changes, and following the ministerial committee and following the introduction of the legislation, we in fact had a sort of implementation committee, if you like, which required government departments to forward to us examples of how they had changed the internal policies, so that we weren't just looking at legislation, we were looking at policies and practices within departments, and that extended to local government. We asked all 300 and odd local government authorities to send to us details of how they had amended their practices and policies and procedures to comply with the requirement to provide equal treatment to people regardless of their sexual orientation. Some submitted quite comprehensive action plans, others submitted very little. Of the six complaints that were lodged during the 05-06 year on the basis of sexual orientation, one was in the area of employment and five related to the provision of goods and services.
What significance do you attach to the rapidly decreasing number of inquiries that you get?
I think it reflects the fact that there was an enormous amount of publicity around the legislation. So 02-03 was sort of right on the cusp of the legislation's introduction. We had enormous numbers of inquiries for information about the legislation, about its effects, inquiries from schools and from people just in the general public who wanted copies of information brochures and so on that were produced about the effects of the legislation. And over time, those inquiries have declined, as you can see, because people have generally, I think, become more aware. I've mentioned at Para 14 that most of the complaints that have been lodged and have gone through the formal process of being investigated and so on have not actually related specifically to financial benefits. There have been some that relate to employment, and we've given you a couple of examples of those. A young woman who was denied permanent employment at a mine site where her partner worked there in a same-sex relationship. The employer denied that there'd been unlawful discrimination. The matter wasn't conciliated. It was referred to the Equal Opportunity Tribunal, and in mediation there, a matter of 7 months to reach. There was also a more recent complaint of a man who applied for a position as a caretaker with his gay partner. The position was advertised as being suitable for a couple. The Strata company manager interviewed him on behalf of the body corporate, gave him the impression he had the position, all but for the formalities. Then the manager discovered the applicant was gay. His application went no further. He actually asked the manager directly whether it was because of his sexuality, and the manager said, well, yes. Now, that matter is currently before the State Administrative Tribunal and may well be resolved there. They're the only two recent complaints that really come within the terms of reference of the inquiry. But we certainly appreciate the opportunity to contribute. Certainly, state rules, whilst they've been amended, are limited in their application. It's clear that many of the benefits that flow from federal legislation are still discriminatory in their impact. And as a commission, we are concerned about that. We believe that currently it could well be argued that because of the international political rights, that Australia could well be in breach of that as a result of continuing to have federal legislation that discriminates against people on the basis of their sexual preference. And we would strongly support any recommendation from the Human Rights and Equal Opportunity Commission to support the introduction of legislation to eliminate discrimination on the basis of sex.
Thank you. You did mention to us that some of the 47 recommendations that were made by the Ministerial Committee were referred to other agencies. What were the other agencies to which they were referred?
Well, some of them, for example, asked for there to be research done on things, so they went for legislative amendment. There was one that recommended changes in relation to how a jury ought to be instructed, and that, for example, was referred to the Law Society. And then there were some that related to practices and procedures rather than to legislation. They were the sorts of matters that were referred to the bodies concerned.
You've also referred to a number of exceptions. Were they exceptions that were supported by your permission, or are there views that you think would warrant some reconsideration of those exceptions?
Most of those exceptions that are outlined on paragraph 11 are exceptions that are sprinkled throughout the Act, and they apply to most other grounds, so they haven't really been changed over the years. The one which I think deserves some attention and is actually currently under consideration because we're conducting a review of the Act is the question of the capacity for religious bodies to discriminate. This is a very broad exception and allows, for example, religious educational institutions to discriminate on a wide range of attributes when selecting staff. Now, it's couched in language that talks about, so as not to offend the beliefs of and the tenets of the religion, but in fact it has been used, and we have had complaints from people who have been dismissed or otherwise disadvantaged in their employment as a result of things like divorce, where it's not recognised by that religion, or remarriage, where it's not recognised by the religion. Single parenthood in some cases is not is frowned upon by some religions, and so we've had situations where people who could not be described as being in positions to pass on the tenets of the religion to students, but have nevertheless been influenced by these requirements. For example, people who might be gardeners or might be employed in preparing food for students are subject to the same kinds of provisions as are applied to the staff, and it's been our view that that exception is probably drawn far too widely and needs looking at again.
Just one, I think you've answered most of my questions, but the one question I had was, are you able to assess the impact on community attitudes that the changes in the state legislation over the last couple of years may have had, and if so, indicate, you know, whether that's been a positive impact?
I think when the whole matter was first debated, there were some appalling attitudes that were revealed in that debate. And it's interesting, if you follow the parliamentary debate itself, that in opposing parts of this, there was a link made in the opposition parties between other so-called social issues which include a knockout community support, such as so-called going soft on drugs and prostitution, and a whole range of those sorts of issues were thrown into the debate. I think things have changed considerably since those days. There was enormous publicity surrounding this legislation, which went on for many months and dominated the local newspapers. But I think by the time we were sending letters out to local authorities, for example, some of which are located in very remote and in farming districts which are not renowned for being socially progressive, if by that stage we didn't get back any responses which were which indicated a total unwillingness to do anything, save one which actually asked us to provide them with funds to draw up their action plan. But other than that, shires and councils in areas which are traditionally very conservative, in fact, sent us copies of changes they had made to their internal documents and policies where appropriate. And there was, as I recollect, after this legislation went through, we had to look through all the government forms and so on that needed changing, for example, the forms of registration of births and so on, all needed changing. There was no opposition to this, there was no controversy around it, it was just accepted, and it is in place now and continues to be in place. And we get very few comments, we've had very few suggestions from any quarters that this legislation has in any way contributed to any ills in the community. On the contrary, I think it's moved things along.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.